Hey, it's Greg Brown. Grab your logbook, because it's time for another cockpit adventure from the flying carpet. I'm an aviation author, adventure columnist, photographer, former National Flight Instructor of the Year, and Barnes & Noble Arizona Author of the Month. The flying carpet is a four-place single-engine light airplane. In it, my wife Jean and I have long traveled the North American continent, searching behind clouds for the real America, and experiencing aerial adventures like today's all along the way. Learn more at my website, gregbrownflyingcarpet.com, where you can also see photos from most episodes. And I'd appreciate your feedback in my Flying Carpet Podcast Facebook group. Okay, everyone, hop aboard my flying carpet, buckle your seatbelts good and tight, and prepare for takeoff on today's adventure, Realm of the Ancients. Clear prop. My archaeologist friend, Tom Wins, has invited us to join him for fieldwork near Chaco Canyon, wrote my buddy Adriel Heise. This is an unprecedented opportunity to poke around a Chacoan ruin under the sanction of a pro. Care to join us? You could fly into Window Rock for a multimedia party at our apartment Saturday night, stay overnight in our humble guest quarters, and then reposition the flying carpet Sunday morning to Crown Point, New Mexico, where I'd meet you with our truck. That way you could fly directly home to Phoenix that evening when we're done exploring. If you want to check the locations on a map, we'd be traveling to the La Vida Mission at Lake Valley, New Mexico, north of Crown Point, and driving by four-wheel drive from there. I could scarcely believe our good fortune. Chaco Canyon ranks among the most significant native archaeological sites in the Southwest, encompassing hundreds of ruins in remote northwest New Mexico. The vast complex is accessible only by dirt road, often requiring high-clearance four-wheel drive vehicles. It had been on our wish list for at least 15 years. And to explore an unpublicized ruin under the guidance of a pro, I accepted even before finishing Adriel's note. Window Rock, located in far northeast Arizona, is capital of the Navajo Nation and gateway to the scenic Four Corners region where Colorado, New Mexico, Arizona, and Utah intersect. Along with photographing the area by ultralight aircraft for books and such magazines as National Geographic and Arizona Highways, Adriel flew King Air turboprops for the Navajo Nation. His wife, Holly, was a nurse midwife at the regional Indian Health Service Hospital. No wonder Adriel and Holly love this country, agreed Jean and I as we approached for landing that May morning following an hour and 45-minute flight. The tortured terrain, purity of sky, and velvety high-elevation light make for a luminous landscape like nowhere else. A car, hangar, and several pages of directions awaited us when we landed. When you arrive at Window Rock, park your plane by the small hangar beside the terminal building. Walk through the gate to the white compact car parked at the terminal building. It will be unlocked. Open the padlock on the side door of the hangar, slide open the hangar doors, and wheel your plane in. You may drive to your plane if you like. Following is the gate code. All we lacked to qualify for a Mission Impossible episode was for this to be recorded on a self-destructing tape. Jean read me those instructions as we taxied from the runway amid one of the most striking landscapes on the planet. After stowing the flying carpet and revisiting the stone arch for which Window Rock is named, we proceeded via detailed instructions to the Heise gathering. There we mingled with an eclectic mix of Navajo guests along with expat teachers, engineers, and healthcare professionals from around the country. Non-natives can live on the res, as it's commonly called, only as tribal employees residing in dedicated housing. Adriel dropped us at Window Rock Airport early the next morning, and fueled by coffee following the late night but teetotaling party, alcohol's prohibited on the Navajo Nation, Gene and I launched on the 42 nautical mile flight to Crown Point, New Mexico, northeast of Gallup. For 20 unforgettable minutes, our windows brimmed with golden backbones of mountains, crimson stone hoodoos and spires, eight-sided Navajo hogans, and amorphous mud sweat lodges. Never did the flying carpet seem so aptly named as when we challenged Vermilion Cliffs on landing at isolated, unattended Crown Point Airport, which lacked so much as a single building. We were still securing the plane with tie-down ropes from the baggage compartment when Adriel showed up in his truck. "How did he get here so fast, given the rugged terrain we've just flown?" marveled Jean. Before she could ask, a Navajo neighbor stopped to check us out, presumably because the gate was open. When Adriel's archaeologist friend failed to materialize at our planned trading post rendezvous point, we tracked him down at the La Vida Mission. At first impression, Tom Wynn seemed a somber man, masked by full-coverage sunglasses, a fishing hat, and a bushy mustache. But his day-glow scarlet shirt and yellow bandana suggested adventure beneath the surface. Joining Tom was his missionary host, Bob, attired in a Sancho Panza hat. All five of us squeezed into Adriel's truck. "Not a word to anyone about where this place is located," cautioned Tom upon learning I was a writer. "We dare not expose the location to looters. The biggest problem is from unknowing visitors who disturb sites and scoop up artifacts as souvenirs. If only we could educate every visitor not to pick things up." He needn't have worried. By the time we'd driven miles on dirt roads, made countless turns at unmarked tracks, bumped over rutted pastures and doubled back repeatedly in search of our destination, I couldn't have revealed the location if my life depended on it. We stopped at a Navajo homestead for permission to access the site, waiting in our truck by time-honored tradition for the occupants to come out and greet us. When no one emerged, we left a note, then forged through another dozen or so turns and reversals between fantastical stone hoodoos over trackless country. Along the way, Adriel noted the home of a Navajo boy he'd once befriended during a photo shoot. "I took the 11-year-old flying in my ultralight aircraft," he said, "and was rewarded with a tour of a secret Mesa Top ruin." "That ruin must be Mesa Verdean," observed Tom, "based on its precarious location. Chacoans always built on the flats." By the time Tom signaled Adriel to stop, Gene and I ached from jolting over holes and ruts in the stiffly suspended truck. "See that dark vegetation," Tom said, pointing to a distant hill. "It's tansy mustard. Although the indicators change from year to year, plant variations help mark archaeological sites and sometimes suggest what might be buried there. We're looking at what's essentially a 1,000-year-old garbage dump." Suddenly animated, he charged up the hill, leading the rest of us like a scientific Pied Piper, his enthusiasm increasing with every step. Before our eyes, the archaeologist transformed from curmudgeon to encyclopedic mentor. Trekking behind the others, Gene and I soaked up the beauty of the place and wondered if we'd encounter ancient pottery among the endless vistas and wildflowers. Then she spotted an exquisitely painted potsherd. Soon the ground was carpeted with them, and the air became dense with ancient spirits. Tom estimated the midden at 20 to 30 feet deep, encompassing millions of artifacts, and upon reaching the top, we could see why. The surface was densely littered with signs of early human habitation. Pottery shards were everywhere. Those white shards, painted with intricate black designs, come from the native equivalent of fancy china, Tom explained. The textured, unpainted shards are from everyday wear, and the red pottery was brought here from somewhere else. Tom's mission today followed up from a previous visit on the theory that ornamental jewelry was manufactured at this site. He set us to work in pursuit of sandstone tools and hand-worked red dog shale, a ginger-hued stone originating in mountains some 50 miles away. Those are scraps from jewelry making, he explained. Tom flagged the source location of each artifact we found so it could be replaced after photography. After hours battling blazing sun and strong wind in search of artifacts, the fruit of our collective labor was a single photograph documenting 12 tiny objects, accompanied by a handful of notes. Lunching afterwards in the shadow of a boulder, Tom floated his theory that undiscovered archaeological sites might mark a particular axis from Chaco Canyon's main ruins. Such things can only be scouted by air, observed Adriel, and not in the King Air's iFly or my single-seat ultralight. Intrigued, I volunteered the flying carpet for future scouting missions. An outstanding day, beamed Tom, as we hiked back to the truck. Back we bumped along serpentine trails, dodging grazing horses and trailing for several humorous moments a trotting cow and her calf, occupying what might loosely be called the road. Following a tour of Kinbiniola ruins by our resident archaeologist, we dropped Tom and Bob at the mission and returned to Crown Point. There our lonely flying carpets soaked up sinking sun on the isolated ramp of an empty airport in an empty landscape. Think I'll take some photos, I told my companions. Try to capture the remoteness of this place. Might be cool to stand on the truck, offered Adriel. The perspective will be more interesting. Here, give me your camera. Under the artful direction of a National Geographic photographer, Gene and I repositioned the flying carpet. Half a dozen shots and two hugs later, I cranked up the engine, leaned the fuel mixture for takeoff from the 6,700-foot elevation airport, and we rolled down the runway. Hey, look, said Gene as we turned downwind toward home. Alongside the runway, Adriel could be seen gazing cross-legged from the hood of his truck. In the crystalline Four Corners air, his tiny silhouette remained visible, almost until we crossed Timber Ridge southwestward toward Gallup. Squeezing hands after such a fulfilling day, Gene and I pondered the perspective of our slowly receding friend. Artist that he is, we imagined Adriel training his meditative eye on our lonely flying carpet, watching us disappear over this mystical golden land of the ancients into a blood-red sunset. Thanks for riding along on today's flying carpet adventure. Please help me continue this podcast by sharing your favorite flying carpet episodes on social media, posting reviews on your favorite podcast directories, and donating via my Greg Brown Flying Carpet website. Thanks in advance for your support. You can find photos from most episodes at my website, gregbrownflyingcarpet.com. If you enjoyed today's episode, please check out my book of aviation adventure stories, Flying Carpet, The Soul of an Airplane, for which I was named Barnes & Noble Arizona Author of the Month. Learn about that and my other aviation books at gregbrownflyingcarpet.com. Also at gregbrownflyingcarpet.com, you'll find my Views from the Flying Carpet aerial photography, available in fine art metal prints and pilot achievement plaques. Oh, and I'd appreciate hearing your feedback in my Flying Carpet podcast Facebook group. Follow my social media sites, most of which can be found by searching Greg Brown Flying Carpet. and consider joining my Student Pilot Pep Talk group on Facebook. Thanks again for joining me on today's Flying Carpet Cockpit Adventure. Music by Hannes Brown. See you next time.